All right, how many of you make New Year's resolutions every year? How many of you gave up on New Year's resolutions? You have a resolution not to make resolutions? Is that your resolution? So top 10 New Year's resolutions that are most commonly broken. All right, so I think we probably all can list these without me having to read them. But just so you know, top 10, number one, lose weight and get fit. Is the number one most commonly broken New Year's resolution. Quit smoking. Number three, learn something new. Number four, eat healthier and diet, which I think goes hand in hand with number one, is the most commonly broken New Year's resolutions. Five, get out of debt and save money. Six, spend more time with family. Seven, travel to new places. Eight, be less stressed. Nine, volunteer more of my time. And number 10, most commonly broken New Year's resolution, drink less. So those are all probably New Year's resolutions that we have made at some point and broken at some point. So the question is, why do we have such good intentions, particularly when it comes to a brand new year, fresh start? Why do we have such good intentions and fail so miserably when it comes to things like New Year's resolutions? And I think the key is one word. It's priorities. What are our priorities? You see, we tend to live life prioritizing what is most urgent over what is most important. Prioritizing the urgent over the important. And the result of that is that we live very overcrowded lives, over busy lives, stressing what is most urgent over what is important. And I don't have to tell you this, but we all know the symptoms of living life that way. Busyness controls our life. We're controlled by what's next on the agenda. The busyness of life takes priority. When that happens, pressure increases, stress increases. We live life with kind of this nagging guilt, like, why am I not doing the things I set out to do? Why am I not eating healthier? Why am I not spending more time with my family? Why am I not volunteering more of my time? And then that kind of trickles down into some type of escapism behavior. We're trying to displace things in life or replace things in our lives. And so we tend to do something to that. That's kind of an escape behavior, whether that's an addiction or spending too much time watching TV or something that doesn't require a lot of thought or a lot of investment. And so we kind of fall into those traps of living kind of escape life. Financially, we incur debt when that happens. The debt becomes overwhelming. All of that adds up to almost this kind of sense of losing our joy, our fulfillment, our happiness. We become less productive in the process. And then, maybe most importantly, we squeeze God out of our lives. We can't hear God because we don't take time to stop and listen, because the busyness of life is overwhelming. And I don't know about you, one of the hardest verses in the Bible for me is Psalm 46, where God tells us to be still and know that I am God. Be still. Like, even me pausing for a minute makes you feel slightly uncomfortable, right? Be still and know that I am God. Sometimes we can't get the be still to be able to get the know that I am God. Here's what I know about your life. You are prioritizing something. The question is, what is it? What am I prioritizing? And here's the key to understanding our priorities in life. What does my living and what does my giving say about my priorities? What is my living, how I live life, how I spend my time, what I do in everyday life? What does my living say about my priorities? And then how do I spend the things that are closest to me? How do I spend my money? How do I spend my time? Those things will tell me a lot about your priorities. And the question for us heading into a new year is, am I prioritizing Jesus? I think we all want to answer yes to that. If we're a follower of Jesus, we want to say that I'm prioritizing Jesus, and there's a quick way for us to kind of check the pulse of life to know whether we're prioritizing Jesus. And it has to do with how we're living life and how we're spending our time and money. So let's talk about those things. Let's talk about living. What does my living say about my priorities? What do I prioritize in everyday life? And the fastest indicator is how I spend my time. How do I spend my time? Here's what I know about time. One, time is limited, right? You don't get an unlimited amount of it. You have a limited amount of time. So I know that. Time is limited. The second thing I know about your time is all of your time will be spent somehow. It'll be spent doing something. Some way you're going to spend your time. And the third thing I know about your time is that someone will determine how you spend it. Someone will determine how you spend your time. You will determine it, or other people will determine it, or maybe there's a third option we'll discuss in a moment. If you're determining, or let's start with others, because that's the obvious one. If others are determining how you spend your time, you're going to find yourself doing what they think is important, what they think is urgent. Your boss, the deadlines you have to meet, your spouse, your friends, your kids, that's a big one, will often determine how you spend your time. So when other people are spending my time, what they think is important and urgent will be how I spend my time. The flip side of that is if I am determining how I spend my time, I'm usually going to do what I feel is the most urgent in the moment. The deadlines I have to meet, the obligations that I have, the problem I'm addressing, something's going to demand my attention, and that's going to get my time. And so the result of that, when other people or me, when we are determining how our time is spent, the urgent always trumps the important. The urgent always trumps the important. What is right in front of me? What is the most urgent thing on my list? That's going to get my focus, my time. And so how we live our lives then is we kind of live our lives with this one day syndrome. One day I'll do this. One day I'll have more time. One day I'll be able to invest in my kids. One day I'll be able to do these things. One day I'll be able to take the vacation I thought. One day I'll be able to prioritize this. And we live life with kind of this one day syndrome because what's dictating our time is what is most urgent over what is most important. So here's my question for us. What if we were able to learn to allow God to control our time? What if we began to prioritize Jesus in our time? Jesus is our example. We're instructed to follow his example. So when we look at the life of Jesus, how did Jesus spend his time? What did Jesus teach us about prioritizing our time? And when we look at the life of Jesus, we see a few things. One, we see that he always prioritized what was most important over what was most urgent. Jesus was on task. He was on task. Now, did Jesus have distractions in life? A lot of distractions. If you read the life of Jesus, people were constantly vying for his attention. His followers, I mean, he was a miraculous healer, and so he was constantly at the mercy of people who were sick, who were diseased, who were calling out for Jesus. Large crowds of people followed Jesus around, demanding his attention, demanding his time. But when we see the life of Jesus, Jesus was able to focus on what was most important over what was most urgent. What was most important for Jesus? What was most important was the reason that God the Father sent the Son to earth, to ultimately die for the sins of his people. And so Jesus was constantly focused on the things of God. Look at Matthew chapter 16, verse 21. Matthew 16, 21. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and on the third day be raised. That was what was most important in the life of Jesus. And Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you." Peter was a distraction. He was trying to get Jesus off of task. Like, we know that you're here to suffer and die and be raised, but Jesus, we got other things to focus upon. And we've noticed this verse before, verse 23, Jesus' response to Peter. But he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan," like you're trying to get me distracted. And look at the phrase he uses. "You are a hindrance to me. If you're not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." Jesus said to one of his closest followers, "Peter, you're trying to get me distracted. You are trying to hinder me from my purpose here. What is most important, that I have come to die, that I have set my face," the New Testament says, Jesus set his face. He was determined to go to Jerusalem to die and be raised back to life. He was able to focus on what was most important over what was most urgent, even when those that were the closest to him tried to capture his attention, tried to capture his time. So a question that I like to ask myself is, in light of what's most important, not most urgent, in light of what's most important, what is the wise, what is the best thing for me to do? Can I tell you what that means practically sometimes? What that means practically sometimes, that there will be times in your life, get ready for it, hold on to your seat, there will be times in your life, at times you have to say no. Can't do it. I have to say no to that. And here's the key. Sometimes it might be to good things that are not the best things. In light of what is most important, what is the best thing, what is the wise thing to do? You know what that means for us practically? That means that my kids can't be involved in every single thing in life. We have to be focused on what we choose. We have to say, all right, what are they the most passionate about? What are they the most focused upon? And that's what we're going to do. We're not going to play every sport. We're not going to say yes to every opportunity. We're not going to say yes to every night of the evening. We have to be focused on what's most important. Now, does that mean that I pull my kids completely out of sports, or I don't allow them to do anything but sit in their rooms and do homework and never watch TV and never play video games because they should be reading their Bibles or praying or doing something spiritual? Absolutely not. Of course not. If you know my kids, you know that's not how we live life. But what it does mean is it means that there's some few things that we can do that we need to stay focused on. And we want to decide what is the most important things and stay focused on those things. While having a good time, while celebrating, while going to practices, by doing the things that allow us to stay focused on those very few things. So you're going to have to learn to say no to some stuff that may not be bad things, but they may not be the most important things. Because here's what I've learned. What I've learned is if we overbusy our lives, we'll begin to say no to the most important things over the most urgent things. We'll say yes to things that deprioritizes Jesus. We'll say yes to things that emphasizes sports or whatever and de-emphasizes church or Jesus, because we get our priorities out of whack. Learn to say yes to what's most important, and sometimes to say no to what's most seeming urgent in the moment. Here's another thing that we learn from the life of Jesus about this issue. We have to learn to make time with God our highest priority. Now we have to make time with God our highest priority. In all that was going on in the life of Jesus, time and time again, we read that Jesus withdrew from the crowd to spend time with God the Father. This is the Son of God. This is Jesus, who felt the urgency to spend time with the Father. Luke 5:16 says that he often withdrew to spend time with God. Before healing, before miraculous events, before he chose the 12 disciples, we read time and time again that Jesus withdrew to spend time alone with God. Matthew chapter 6, verse 33 is the very tail end of one of Jesus' sermons. And Jesus is talking about things that we tend to worry about. the things in life, providing and clothing and food and the things that tend to get our attention, the urgent things. And Jesus brings into view this summary statement about everything he was talking about that we tend to worry about. Matthew 6, verse 33. But instead of worrying about all these things, Jesus says, but instead seek, and then here's the key word, seek when? First. Not after everything else is done. Not when there's time left over. Not when I have the space in my life for it. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And then look at the promise that Jesus gives here. When we seek first, when we prioritize Jesus, all these things will be added to you. So it's kind of backward thinking. Because we tend to think, well, how am I going to get X, Y, and Z done? Like, how am I going to spend time with God and get my kids' lunch ready and get my kids to school on time and get to work on time? But Jesus said, if we will learn to seek him first, seek Jesus first, then he will add those things to our lives, that he will take care of the things that we tend to worry about, that God grants the capacity to do these things, he says, these things will be added to you, that God grants us the capacity to do these things when we prioritize him, when we seek him first. The highest command in all of Scripture is to do what? To love God. To love God supremely, with all of our hearts, all of our minds, all of our souls. And what that means practically for us is we need to learn to give God our very best moments. And what I've learned in my life is I'm not always great at this. If I will create the capacity, if I will create the space in my life to give God his time first, then God gives me the capacity to do everything else I need to do in life. Now, I live a busy life. I work a full-time job outside of trying to lead City Church. We have three teenagers. We have a newborn. We have a lot going on in life. And it's easy for me to squeeze God out of the first few moments of the day in order to get done the things I feel like I need to get done that are the most urgent. But what I've learned in life is if I will learn to give God the first few moments, if it's the first 5 minutes, the first 10 minutes, the first 15 minutes, whatever it is for you, learn to give God the very best of your time. Quality time with God. Make time with God your highest priority. And then what we also learn from the life of Jesus on this matter is to make time with others our second priority. Jesus said that the greatest command was to love God, and the second command was to love others. Jesus lived his life prioritizing time with others. And here's how he did it. He invested in what I call insiders, followers of Jesus. He invested in believers. He invested in Jesus followers. He invested his time in other followers of Jesus and leading the disciples, investing in them. They spent their time with Jesus. He spent his time with them. He pulled them aside out of the crowds many times to invest in them. He spent his time investing in both insiders and influencing outsiders, right? Jesus spent a lot of time healing people, preaching to people, teaching to people, teaching the crowds, people that were not his followers. He spent time investing in the insiders and investing in the outsiders. And that's kind of how we need to live life. You're not called to live the Christian life by yourself. That you need to have a circle of people, a family. We put it in the forms of small groups and other ways to allow you to be able to invest in other people that are on the same journey as you. And you should also be seeking to have a sphere of influence with people who are not followers, investing in them, being Jesus to them, to those friends, family, neighbors, coworkers that may not be followers of Jesus, to seek to live life before them and point them to Jesus. Prioritizing time with God. Prioritizing time with other people. Here's a very pointed question for those of us who are parents. What does my life priorities say to my kids about how important Jesus is to me? What are the things that I prioritize in my life, say to my kids, about how important Jesus is? I mean, we can talk the talk all we want, but our kids see through that, right? They know what's really important. And I'll be really frank with you for a moment. My kids know if Jesus is my highest priority. If I choose ball games over Jesus, they know it. If I choose sleeping in over Jesus, they know it. If I choose, let's go do this instead of prioritizing Jesus, they know it. The way you live your life is saying something to your kids about how important Jesus is to you. We are communicating our priorities in the simplest ways, aren't we? And if my kids know that attending church is a priority for us, investing in other believers is a priority for us, reading my Bible is a priority for us, praying together is a priority for us, having gospel conversations about Jesus and about life, if we are constantly engaging our kids with those gospel-type conversations about everyday life, then they know that. They know that. If Jesus is just a box that we check occasionally on the weekend, they know that. If they know that the majority of my life is lived outside of the framework of Jesus, they know that. If I'm never engaging my kids in conversations about what it means to follow Jesus in everyday life, they know that. What does my life say to my kids, to my sphere of influence, about who Jesus is in my life? Am I prioritizing Jesus? Let me put it in a very practical way for you. If you were to live the average length of time in the United States, which is about 75 years right now, that gives you 3,900 weeks to live. 3,900 weeks. So this is about 3,900 beings. 3,900. So for me, right, this is how much time I've spent on earth. This is how much time I've got left if I were to live around 75. Now, you know, with technology and things today and medicine, it's getting a little longer than that. But if we were to take 75 or we were to take 90, it really doesn't matter, does it? That's how much time I've got left. Like, this visual helps me understand every week I've lived another life. I've lived another week in my time. Every week I've got a certain amount of hours to invest in my time with God, my time with my kids. Every week the decisions that I make about what's most important over what's most urgent, as my time ticks away and my jars, one gets more full and one gets less full. That's the reality of my life. Your life reality is somewhere in these jars. Somewhere you feel like you may have more. Some of you feel like you have less. But this visually is what we have. How do we prioritize Jesus in the jars of life? Like, are ball games, like, really worth it? Like, is the things that we tend to prioritize, like, really, like, this is what we've got, people. This is what we've got to impact our world, to impact our kids, to impact our lives. This is it. And every week, one being transfers into the other jar. And at some point, right, at some point, our time is gone. And only a few things will matter when it's all said and done. Is how I'm living life prioritizing Jesus? What does my living say about my priorities? How am I spending my hours, my time? Let's talk about the other one. It's not easy to talk about, is it? How is my giving? What does my giving say about my priorities? Am I prioritizing Jesus with one of the most important things in life, with my money, with my bank account? You know, Jesus talked about money more than any other topic, more than heaven, more than hell. And the reason he did is because he knows that that is the thing that's usually the closest to our hearts. Now, we don't talk hardly ever about money at City Church because I think that when you understand grace and when you understand the capacity of the gospel, then giving just becomes a natural part of that. But Jesus talked a lot about it. He had a lot to say about giving. And the reason is because he says in Matthew 6 that your heart and your money go hand in hand. Now, I know some things about your time. I also know some things about your money. I know that you are living on a certain percentage of your income. Okay? You're always living off of a certain percentage of your income. Some of you live off of 90% and you give 10% or you save 10%. Some of you are living off of 80%. You are giving 10%. You are saving 10% and you live off of the 80. Most Americans, and that means probably most of us, are living off of probably 100% or more. In other words, whatever comes in goes out, period. Whatever we get in goes out in some direction, some way, period. Statistics show in American culture, the average American's living off of about 110% of their income. In other words, they're spending whatever comes in and then another 10% in credit or debt or some way. And so we kind of live life at that full capacity, and culture pushes us to that capacity. Spend whatever you have, whatever you get. So I know that you are living off of some percentage of your income every month. I also know that most people believe if they had more money, then things would be better. Most people believe that. They buy into that mindset. If I had more money, things would be better. If I had blank more a month, then I could whatever, buy, save, give, own. If I had blank more dollars a month, then I could do, buy, purchase, give, save, vacation, whatever it is, you can fill in either blank. If I had blank more a month, I could blank. So most people buy into that mindset. But here's what I also know. The issue is not how much we bring in, but what we do with what we bring in, how we manage it. Jesus called us managers of his money, that God owns everything, and we have the opportunity to manage a certain portion of it. The question is, am I prioritizing Jesus with it? You see, the issue is not income. The issue is lifestyle. We tend to choose lifestyles that either match our income or surpass our income. And we don't leave much margin for error. So if we lose a job or we lose some portion of our income, then we find ourselves under financial strain, financial debt, upside down, because we leave no room for margin. We leave no room for error. How do I know that the issue is not income, but lifestyle? Here's how I know. Did you know that rich people tend to go bankrupt more than anyone else? Now, I know how we think. I know. Man, if I was that professional athlete, how could he have lost $40 million? How could he have signed that contract and now be bankrupt? Don't we think that way? Like we hear about some rich person, somebody that won the lottery going bankrupt. And that would never be me. Like I would invest that money. I would buy X, Y, and Z with that money. I would take care of that money. We all think that way, don't we? But the reality is it's a mindset issue. It's not about how much you come in. It's about what you do with what comes in. More rich people go bankrupt than anyone. They also feel more financial pressure than anyone. Why? Because the issue is not income. The issue is lifestyle. And we live in a culture that pushes us to our limit. Every TV commercial, every TV show, every movie is about buying more, getting more, having more, living with whatever we need that we think will make us feel happy. What does Jesus teach us about this priority? Look at Matthew 6. These are some of the most eye-opening verses in all of Scripture about this topic. Jesus says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Why? Moth and rust destroy, thieves break in and steal. Instead, verse 20, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break and steal. And then here is a key verse that can really revolutionize the way you think about income and money. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Here's what Jesus says about money. Managing God's money, notice I said God's money, managing God's money is a heart issue. It's a heart issue. God is the owner of everything. And he has given us the opportunity to manage a certain portion of it. I know, you're like me. You're like, I wish I had more to manage. But God has allowed us and entrusted us with a certain portion to manage. And the question for us is, what do we value? What do we value in life? Because that's where you invest your money. And Jesus says your heart follows your money. Now get this principle. If I invest my money in temporary stuff, what do I get? I get temporary results. Your treasure will become someone's junk. That's what this verse is saying. All the things that we invest in, our new cars and our TVs and our video gaming systems and everything that we tend to invest in will at some point become someone else's junk. We just cleaned out our garage yesterday. Man, what an undertaking that is. And you know, when I was loading stuff up to take it to the dumpster not too far from my house, there were things in that pile that I was throwing away that at some point I treasured and valued and thought, man, this is awesome. I'm glad I own this. And yesterday, I threw it in a dumpster because my treasures become someone else's junk. So what's the wise thing to do? The wise thing to do is invest our money in eternal matters, to prioritize the eternal with our money. And the result of that is we invest eternally, there are eternal results. Now, hear me closely. It's not wrong to have stuff. It's not wrong to invest in and buy nice things. That's not the issue. We live in what I would consider a nice home. God has enabled us to drive nice vehicles that are not constantly breaking down. God has given me a good job that pays well and those things. It's not wrong to have stuff and to have nice stuff. The issue is what? The issue is our hearts. What does my heart say about money? Money is a heart matter. Here's the key. What do I value more? Do I value God more or bigger, nicer, more? I mean, we can follow the money trail, can't we? Where do I spend my money? How do I spend it? I was raised and have carried this principle over into life that if I were to prioritize God in my giving, then God would take care of everything else. I have simply learned that I can live off of, and we'll just use 90% because 10% is a general kind of starting point for giving. We give much more than 10% now, but we'll kind of use that. I've learned that I can live more effectively off of 90% of God's money than 100% of my money. That God has a way of taking care of us when we entrust him with our money. Why do we get offended when people talk about money, talk about giving? Like, do we really think that churches are looking to fill up their coffers? Like, I can tell you no. City Church is not looking to fill up its coffers. Do we really think like that's why pastors or churches talk about money, that as your pastor, I want what is absolutely best for you, right? And part of God's absolute best for you is to learn to prioritize Jesus in the everyday matters of life. And Jesus says one of the things that is the closest to our hearts is our money. That if we look where our money is going, we'll know what our hearts are saying. And if I want God's absolute best for you, I want you to prioritize Jesus in everything. And I know one of the closest things to your heart and one of the most potentially destructive things in your heart is your money, is greed. And the best way to overcome greed, self-centeredness, is to learn to be a generous person, to prioritize God in our lives. So my challenge for you in 2017 is to prioritize Jesus in your giving. Here's how Ashley and I do it practically. We practice what we call priority percentage giving. Two key words, priority percentage giving. Priority giving. We prioritize Jesus in our giving. He doesn't get the leftovers. He doesn't get, once I've paid the bills, if there's still some left, then we'll give. He doesn't get, let me wait to the end of the month to see if we're going to scrape by and then I'll throw $5 in. We prioritize Jesus in our giving. He gets the first money every month. Or ever, how often you pay the bills. Jesus gets our first money. We prioritize him. And what I've discovered is when I prioritize Jesus in my giving, he has a tendency to take care of everything else that happens that month. We prioritize him. The second principle that we practice is percentage giving. You see, I've just learned that if it's up to me, I'm going to throw in whatever's left. But if I prioritize Jesus and say, Jesus, we're going to prioritize you by giving you X percent of our income every month. Now, there's always this constant discussion, like, is tithing an Old Testament principle? Is it a New Testament principle? Is it a biblical principle? The word tithe actually means 10%. It definitely was in God's economy in the Old Testament for his people to bring a minimum of 10%. It was actually closer to 20% in the Old Testament. The New Testament seems to fulfill that Old Testament law. And you know what Jesus does with it? He raises the bar. Jesus doesn't say, hey, forget the whole 10% thing. Jesus says, well, actually, God owns everything and we are to give everything to him. And so what I have learned in my practical experience is that 10% is a bottom line starting point for us. Okay? Now, I understand if you want to run a marathon, you don't like just get up off the couch and brush the Cheeto crumbs aside and run 26 miles. I understand that to run a marathon, you have to get off the couch, take a few steps, walk to the end of the block, then hopefully you can run to the end of the block, and then you go half a mile and a mile, and you work your way up to a marathon, right? That's how the process works. And so what I would say to you is if you're serious about prioritizing Jesus in this area of your life, find a starting point. Get off the couch. Run around the block. Okay? So I think for most Americans, 10% is a great starting point. If you say, Devin, there's no possible way I could do 10%, start with something. Start with something and pray that God will enable you to grow it to at least that 10% mark. It's a heart issue. Did you know that our money is one of the only areas in the Bible where God says, test me. Test me. And I'll prove my faithfulness. Why did God choose money? Is it because that's one of the most difficult areas to trust God with? Is our money? So, bottom line question for us, heading into 2017. Bottom line question for our living and our giving. Can God be trusted? Can he be trusted? Can he be trusted with my time when it feels like I do not have any? Can he be trusted? Can God be trusted with my money? When it sometimes seems like I don't have enough to pay the bills every month, can God be trusted with my money? Do I trust God enough to prioritize the important over the urgent? Do I trust God enough to sometimes say no to good stuff? To ask what is the wise thing to do? Do I trust God enough to prioritize Jesus in my giving? Not just with the leftovers, but with priority, percentage, giving. Here's the gospel approach to priorities. You guys know I'm all about the gospel. You giving God another dollar is not going to make him love you any more or any less, right? You giving more of your time to Jesus is not going to make him love you any more or any less. That's not the gospel. But the gospel approach to priorities comes down to this question. What do I treasure? What do I treasure? You see, I'm afraid that a lot of us follow Jesus, but do we treasure him? Do we treasure Jesus? Do we treasure him in our lives? Not am I a follower of Jesus, but do I treasure him? We claim to know him and to follow him. But do we treasure him? Do we really get and live out the gospel? Because if we treasure Jesus, we desire to prioritize him. I know my wife, my kids. I live life with my wife. My kids. We do life together. But would it be enough if I said, hey, I know my kids, I know my wife, kind of cool people. Is that enough? Or do I treasure them? Do I treasure them? Knowing them doesn't make me a good dad. Knowing them doesn't make me a good father. But treasuring them makes me a good dad. Treasuring Ashley makes me a better husband. I'm not asking if you know Jesus. I'm asking you if you treasure him. Because if you treasure him, you will prioritize him in everyday life, in things like time, in things like money. Let me read you this one small, short parable, and we're done. Matthew 13, verse 44. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man finds the treasure, and covered up. Then, in his obligation, no. In his knowledge that there's treasure in the field? No. In his duty? No. In his what? Joy. In his delight. In his satisfaction. What does he do? He goes and he gives up everything and he sells everything and he goes and he buys that field. Why? Because there's treasure in it. Because it's more valuable than anything he owns. He willingly and joyfully and happily gives up everything to buy a field because he knows that what's in that field is more valuable and worthy than anything and everything he owns. He is more than willing to give it up for the treasure in the field. The kingdom of God, eternal life, which is not a quantity of life, but a quality of life of knowing Jesus and loving Jesus and following Jesus and treasuring Jesus. The kingdom of heaven is so valuable that we should willingly and joyfully give up anything and everything in life to hold on to Jesus, to treasure Jesus, to know Jesus, to love Jesus. completely abandons the meaningless to obtain the treasure. Do something with me this morning, heading into 2017. Take off your watch, or if you don't have a watch, take out your iPhone or whatever it is you use to keep time. Would you take it out and put it in your hand? This is one time you have permission to get your phones out in church. Also, take out whatever it is that you use to that represents your money. Your billfold, a debit card, nothing, whatever it is that you have. Take those two things out and hold them in your hands. Okay? Are we willing to trust God with these two things? Are we willing to trust God this year with our time to prioritize Him, to prioritize Jesus? Say, Devin, I've never prayed. I've never read a Bible. There's so many resources out there now that you could spend 2 minutes a day, 5 minutes a day prioritizing Jesus. That smartphone you're holding in your hand will put it right in front of you in the mornings at the right time, right place to prioritize Jesus. Are you willing to prioritize Jesus with this? To say, Jesus, I want you to control everything, to own everything. I'm willing to give up everything because you are that valuable. I treasure you. Are we willing to give Jesus these two things in 2017? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pray, and I'm going to ask Jesus to help me prioritize these two things in my life this year for Him and for His glory. And I want to encourage you, if you're a follower of Jesus today, I mean, who else shows up to church on January 1st? You're followers of Jesus, right? So I want to encourage you as a follower of Jesus to pray as I pray and say, God, I want to prioritize you and these two most important things in life. I want Jesus to be treasured in my time, my living, and in my giving.